25 years old, had no clue what I was doing or what I was getting into, and thought it was about me most of the time. And, you know, as most people find out along the way, it took me longer than others. My good friend Rich Donnelly would say there's two kinds of people in the world, those that are humble and those that are about to be. We celebrate what we control and every little thing. And by doing those things, we create a pride and cultivate an atmosphere of family and trust that really and truly, Sheets, is only known to those that have taken part, made an impact, and finished. And you create a pride that is only known to those dudes. And when you do that, anything's possible.
You're dialed in to the ABCA's Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, connecting our coaches with some of the best baseball minds in our game. Now here's your host, Jeremy Schiedinger.
We are broadcasting live from the ABCA National Office here in Greensboro, North Carolina, and we have answered your call. You are dialed back into our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, and we truly appreciate each of you joining this conversation. Fired up doesn't even begin to describe how elated I am to get the show out to the masses. And I hope each of you are sitting down in the car or maybe at the office or even on a mower for today's show. Powerful. That is the only adjective that comes close to describing the message that will be coming through the airwaves today. And we're going to get to that in just 1 minute. But supporting this podcast are our proud partners and great friends over at AstroTurf. They are the leaders in the clubhouse for the turf industry. And these folks have been ahead of the curve for almost 50 years, transforming over 200 facilities around the country, including Vanderbilt, Virginia Tech, Oral Roberts, Wichita State, Tulane, and now Kentucky's jumped on board the AstroTurf train, and they want to work with you. So check out more information on their website, astroturf.com. Find out how they can take your facility to brand new levels. Now, with respect to today's show and guest, if you retold this story you're about to hear to your friends or your peers, I'm thinking there's no chance they're going to believe that it's true. So just wait. We're about to unfold a most improbable journey inside this game with the head coach at Sam Houston State University, Matt Deggs. And most of you who are on social media, you've seen the press conference from this year's Super Regionals with Coach Deggs referencing his story in the game, and then more importantly, his approach to coaching and committing to being a transformational leader. And we welcomed in Matt to the podcast to get the entire story behind his roller coaster path in the game and more into his approach to leading the Bearcats at Sam Houston State and building men inside his program. There are strong takeaways throughout this entire show, again, related to transformational leadership, serving our players and their needs, which always comes back to the central theme from truly successful coaches. You better be in this for the right reasons, and that's growing up young men and in it for the relationships. And Coach Deggs echoes those sentiments and goes much, much further, even offering the inner details of how they are running shop over at Sam Houston State. So again, it's going to be wise for you to take a seat on this one. You'll want to give this show your full attention and revel at the incredible story coming your way as we talk with the head coach at Sam Houston State University. Matt Deggs is our guest on today's Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, and this great interview is coming at you right now. Coaches, we're going to start today's episode with a little bit of visualization. I want you to, just for a second, imagine me at my desk, at my computer, microphone in front of me, headset in, and my right hand raised pointed over the fence, because I am calling my shot Babe Ruth style today that this will be an absolute certified audio gold episode. Fired up to talk through what we're going to discuss today at length is going to be transformational leadership. We've got a great story of path in baseball and a journey that's led today's guest to just an awesome place of transforming young men, coaching for the right reasons, and we're so excited to welcome in and kick this show off with the head coach at Sam Houston State, Matt Deggs. Coach Deggs, thanks for being on the call with us today.
Yeah, Sheets, my honor, man. What a privilege to get to be on here with you guys. Y'all do great work.
We appreciate it, and we're definitely looking forward to catching up with you in Indianapolis, and I think you're going to be a hounded man based on what you've done there at Sam Houston State over the last few years, and we're going to get into that. But going back to, you know, obviously the run into Super Regionals and then the press conference and then the social media, catch us up to speed on what it's been post-Super Regional for you every day in the office at Sam Houston State.
It's just been crazy, man. You know, what these boys pulled off and were able to do, and just kind of captured the hearts and minds of not just a city or a region or a big city in Houston or a state, but the better part of the country. And, the one regret that I have in that run is that, you know, obviously we had a 3-run lead against Florida State, a great ball club in the seventh, and that had been our MO with 2 outs all year, is to finish that game and let that slip. And then they got after us pretty good. Just the one regret is I really felt like this team taking that final step to Omaha would have just captured all of the nation, because everybody loves an underdog and an mm-hmm. underdog story.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we do. But there is no doubt in my mind what you've done there in your few years and what that program means. You guys have redefined what a mid-major program looks like. I mean, when you're standing there in the state of Texas, surrounding by giant programs, I mean, look at the statistics. This is awesome. Since 2007, you guys have had over 400-plus wins, 20-plus Major League draft picks, and 8 NCAA tournament appearances run the Supers this year. I mean, there's something in the water down there at Sam Houston State.
No doubt about it, Sheets. It's a destination school, and it's becoming that more and more. And, you know, the groundwork had been laid with Coach Johnson being in 3 straight, mm-hmm. and then David Pierce coming in, and they just had a remarkable run for 3 years. And this school has 3 things that it takes to win and win on a national level. We have unbelievable support from our president, who's an absolute go-getter, and our AD has great vision. We'll put 1,000-plus in the stands every game. And so there's a lot of successful alumni that have come out of here, just a huge fan base. We're so close to Houston. And then we have really good facilities, right. Some of the best facilities for any mid-major in the country. And then arguably, Sheets, we're located better than anybody else in the state, just in our proximity to Houston. And we're close. We're an hour away, but we're not too close. And so consequently, kids love going to school here. And so we've got those components in place that it takes to win and win on a national level. And that's what we've been fortunate enough to do.
It's awesome. Well, we're excited to watch you keep moving forward with the Bearcats. Now, this is out-of-the-box thinking. You and I both felt like this was a moment we needed to get back to this press conference, because I think it will lay the groundwork for where this conversation's going as we dive into your path in the game, sure, but also what transformational leadership is and help kind of guide our coaches away from being transactional. And we thought, man, let's play the press conference. Let's get this audio out. And so we're going to do that, coaches. This is the press conference from the Super Regional appearance, the final loss, where Coach Deggs and his players are reflecting on their season. Enjoy.
It's family, you know. For years, I was a transactional coach. What can I get? What can I get? And when you get fired, it humbles you. I spent 430 days outside the game. Everybody asked, you know, you were here with the Aggies in 2011. No, I wasn't. I was fired. And I just sit there and watch the Aggies play. God has brought me full circle and changed my life. I was dead and he saved me. And so I'm a transformational coach now. It's not about wins or losses. It's about love. It's about building men, building relationships that'll last forever. I got a second chance. This guy's a second chance guy. This guy's a second chance guy. This guy's a second chance guy. We're about building people up. You know, it's not Mission Omaha. It's Mission Build and Save Lives. And that's what we're in the business of doing. This is the most unselfish, selfless group of men and families I've ever been around. This is rare in this day and age. Rare in a microwave society where it's all about entitlement and all about when do I get to play. This guy's playing with a broken left hand right now. Nobody knows that. His left hand's broken. Last year he played with a broken wrist. Last year Taylor Bean played with a broken thumb. I won't even get into the rest of the litany of injuries that are going on with this team right now. Andrew Frigier just walked up to me in the dugout and said, give my last at bat to Nate Van Dyke. Robbie Rojas gave up his last at bat so Hunter Sutherland could catch. You know, there is no greater honor. And this is, I could preach. It's what I wish our country would get back to. There's no greater honor than to sacrifice for a brother. And that encapsulates and embodies this team to a T. That's why they're so lovable.
I still get chills every time I've heard it, and I've heard it 20-plus times. Just an awesome moment in time, Matt, and it's just, you got to follow that up with, where were you at that time? What was the moment? How did all that come together behind the scenes that led you to obviously this great audio gold moment?
You know, what's funny about that press conference, honestly, and I've done a lot of speaking, it's had just an unbelievable, overwhelming type impact. And I don't even remember, you know, people play it back and I hear it. I couldn't repeat to you what I said. It was the way that whole thing came about is we had lost a close game and I woke up the next morning, was doing my devotional time with the Lord, and Kathy was asleep in the bed in the hotel, and I just felt him tell me very powerfully, tell your story. And I'm still so, you know, arrogant and thinking it's about us. And I thought immediately when he spoke that into my heart, awesome, we're going to win. And, you know, it wasn't until that night we were getting our butts kicked, you know, 15, 16, 17 to nothing in the dugout, the light bulb went off and I was like, oh, you want me to tell this right now? And that's really and truly how it came about. And I honestly, Sheets, I couldn't repeat that if I had to.
Right.
And the impact that it's had, I could have never imagined in my wildest dreams.
Sure. Completely organic. Well, that is awesome. We're so glad you walked through that with us. Now, let's get into your story. And this is such a profound view of your journey throughout baseball. And coaches, we got a chance to connect a couple of days ago, and I asked Matt, man, I need to know the story. Give it to me so I can digest it before we jump on the airwaves and really talk through this improbable journey inside our game. So Matt, take us back from your decision to get out of professional baseball and take the plunge and jump into coaching full time. Start from there.
Well, you know what? I was still playing and I was still in pro ball, and Rob Childress, who had coached me at Northwood University, we were really close. Mm-hmm. I was in Mobile, Alabama, and we had a late game and a late night, and he woke me up with a phone call and said, hey, dude, you're very average. You're not going to make it. Why don't you start coaching? And he said, me and Coach Van Horn are here at Northwestern State. I promise you Coach Van Horn will take care of you if you come in here and work hard. And I said, tell you what do I need to do this? And he said, you need to go down to a Sylvan Learning Center, sign up for the GRE, and you've got to score an 810. If you score an 810, we can help you out as a student coach or a graduate assistant, I think they called it back then.
Yep.
And I said, tell you what, Rob, I said, if I make an 810, if I pass this GRE, I'll come do it. And because at that point in my life, I thought I could play and this and that. And I thought I was going to, you know, like everybody, play for as long as you want.
That's right.
So I go down to Sylvan Learning Center. And I scored, the computer spits out your score as soon as it's like a 3-hour test. And I scored exactly an 810. And I was like, oh, wow, I need to go do this. So long story short, loaded up my stuff and went to Natchitoches, Louisiana. And, like a lot of young coaches, fiery, loved to compete. Mm-hmm. And, thought I knew it all. So did go in there and I gave them my absolute best, worked as hard as I could every day. Those guys did what they said they were going to do. Absolutely took care of me. We had a couple of really good ball clubs there, had some great players, and, just a really, really great way to start that my coaching career. And, but you know, obviously being 25, 24, 25 years old, had no clue what I was doing or what I was getting into. And, thought it was about me most of the time. And as most people find out along the way, it took me longer than others. My good friend Rich Donnelly would say there's two kinds of people in the world, those that are humble and those that are about to be.
Oh, that's audio gold right there, my friend. Thank you for dropping that.
Well, it's fact.
Absolutely.
And so I think we get lost a lot of times in making it about us and, results and wins and et cetera, when truly it's not. And, that's just part of your maturation though. And that's part of the process that I think just about every young coach would probably go through.
That's right. So there you are as an assistant at Northwestern State for a couple of years of Coach Van Horn, Coach Childress. Then you have a terrific opportunity to go be the head coach at Texarkana Junior College. Did some fantastic things there, making their first ever World Series appearance. But I want you to kind of dive into that process that got you to become the head coach, then maybe some lessons that you learned along the way as a first-year skipper.
Yeah, I mean, it was you know, I went for that job, and both Rob and Dave had been the head coach there. And I truly, up until I got this job at Sam, had never gotten a job that I applied for or interviewed for.
How about that?
So I interviewed for the job, and I did not get it. And Todd Shelton got it, who's now the head coach at Panola. And he was there exactly 6 weeks. And his wife, who was from McAllister, the Eastern Oklahoma job came open, and they moved up there. And so Texarkana called back and asked, hey, would you like to try this again? And my wife and I had just gotten married. I literally had just hung the last mini blind, hung the last picture in our little rental house there, and had lived there for exactly 2 weeks. She had, since we got married. Mm-hmm. And Rob Childress and I went and rented a U-Haul truck, attached my truck to the back of it, repacked up the house, put it in a U-Haul, and drove the 2.5 hours to Texarkana. And that's where I started my head coaching journey. And I think that was the summer of 97. Mm-hmm. And had no clue, you know, obviously I just knew I loved baseball and and loved to compete and you know, love the game. And obviously I was had zero tact and was very, very rough around the edges, and thought everything revolved around me and the team and the program. And so I'm sure I stepped on a lot of toes and upset a lot of people along the way. But one thing that was probably undeniable was the fact that, you know, that that program and that team and our coaches, we absolutely loved to play. And you had to in a place like that. We had nine scholarships and a league that had, you know, an allotment of 18 fulls and did not have our own field. We had to play at a city park. Our players had to stay. We called it in the, we called it the Coop because it was a formerly it was a Kentucky Fried Chicken warehouse. And so that's where the players stayed in makeshift bunks. And that's what it was like when I first got there. And we did some amazing things. That is just a phenomenal place and a phenomenal level for a young coach to cut their teeth. And that's why I'm such a big proponent of guys coaching in junior college, or even if they have an opportunity of playing in junior college, because you wear so many hats. You learn to appreciate the fact that you travel with $5 of meal money for breakfast and $5 for dinner. And you travel on 2 12-passenger minivans. Yep. And nothing's given to you. Nothing comes easy. You got to earn everything you get. And we did. We took a program that was on 9 scholarships. And 4 years later, we're in Grand Junction, Colorado for the first time playing in the Junior College World Series.
You know, the small college coaching experience is such a blue-collar approach to the game, and certainly humble beginnings from where it's provided you inside your career. Speak to that, but then also talk through the transition that led you out of Texarkana and got you on staff there at Arkansas.
That was crazy. You know, the one thing about junior college is not only are you the head coach or the coach, whichever it may be, you're also the trainer, you're also the scheduler, you're also the field maintenance guy, you're also the monitor of the apartments or the dorms.
That's right.
You're also the academic counselor. So you get to learn, you know, I was actually, believe it or not, they entrusted me to also be the AD. Here we go. I'm like in my late 20s, I'm the AD and head baseball coach. So you're wearing hats. You learn how to handle a budget. You know, I still say this to this day. We didn't have any injuries in junior college. You know why? We didn't have a trainer. The trainer. And, athletic tape, trust me, will fix. It's like duct tape. It'll fix anything.
That's a fact.
And it's fact. And so it's just a great spot and a great place. And I think Coach Van Horn saw that we went in there and rolled up our sleeves. Coach Van Horn appreciates hard work. He don't like talk. He likes guys that produce. Mm-hmm. And that's what we went in there and did. It was a, you know, kind of funny the way it worked out is I had worked really hard for him at Northwestern State. Left, and a semester later, him and Rob Childress left and became the coaches at Nebraska. Mm-hmm. And so they, you know, here they are in a World Series 5 years later for their second time. We had just gone to Grand Junction, and they're actually finishing a super regional headed to Omaha. And I got a phone call from Coach Van Horn and saying that, you know, just that this could be a possibility. Are you interested? And on a leap of faith, Kathy and I, oddly enough, had sold our house already because we were moving into another house. So we backed out of the house we were going to buy, loaded all of our stuff into a mini storage. And Kathy, we only had one child at the time, took our son, went all the way back home to where we grew up, Texas City. And I went and stayed in the boys' apartments. They were all gone. It was summertime. Mm-hmm. And had to watch Nebraska play in a World Series and all that go down for a couple of weeks, just on a leap of faith. And then it was over. Dave called, and we moved up to Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Now, at this point, you're still a young coach, but coming from, again, small college and moving back into SEC, one of the toughest conferences in the country, was there any transitional issues or any learning curve that you went through there as a young coach?
Well, you know, I was fortunate because I was with a guy that's just, he's the biggest winner I've ever known. And so one thing about Coach Van Horn is he trusts you and he lets his guys coach. He lets his guys work. You know, anything that you're willing to take on, he's going to let you do. And so he entrusted me to be his recruiting coordinator and hitting coach and coach the outfielders, coach the base runners, help him with the lineups every day, help him in game, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the biggest thing that you figure out is baseball is baseball. I don't care if you're at, if you're playing in Pony League, high school, junior college, or the SEC. Baseball is baseball. Mm-hmm. And you can't be overwhelmed by that fact. You know, what I learned was trust your gut. If a guy can play, he can play. Mm-hmm. And then get him there and coach him up. And we had just a phenomenal run. We were in a regional all 3 years. In 2004, our second year, we were preseason picked, I think, dead last, and or maybe 10 out of 12. And all we did was win the SEC and win a regional, host a regional. We were top 8 seed, beat Wichita State in walk-off fashion in that regional. And then Florida State came into town. We beat them and wound up in Omaha. So it was a very, very special year. But once again, you got to keep in mind that you are never out of anything if you have Coach Van Horn. I promise you that. He's going to beat you. I don't care if you're playing ping pong, pickup basketball, game of golf, game of pool, game of cards, it don't matter. That's this guy's right. Going
to
win.
For those of you listening in, I know it sounds like a peaceful journey up to this point, but I can assure you there are bumps and bruises ahead that are really going to open up this conversation for us. So stick with us. Coach Daggs, I want you to keep moving forward because now we're going to get into these hidden dynamics that brought you to become on staff at Texas A&M under one of your best friends with Coach Childress. Open that up for us. At the same time, talk about the pack. This is an awesome opportunity to talk about the pack mentality that is so tried and true, but more importantly, it's attached to you and your mentality. Talk about that for us.
Well, you know, we had just come off really successful runs. Nebraska had been to Omaha, and we were doing what we were doing at Arkansas, and the A&M job came open, and you know, it was originally Dave turned them down and you know, he knew I wanted that job. And obviously Rob wanted the job. And Rob and I had visited and talked that, you know, whoever gets the job, we're both going to go. And Rob got the job and I left we had a son and a little 2-year-old daughter. And I left, I don't ever suggest any of these coaches trying this, but I left an 8-month pregnant wife with our third child, and Rob and I, you know, jumped on a flight and I jumped in the vehicle or the truck and met in College Station on a hot June afternoon, late June, and went to work, rolled up our sleeves. And it was very daunting. We were taking over, although we didn't realize it at the time, we were taking over for a legend in Coach Johnson. I think, especially myself, we kind of missed the significance of that because we caught a lot of backlash and heat, not really accepted a whole lot initially. Mm-hmm. And walked into a ball club that, you know, was challenged. And we were both hotshot young coaches, and especially myself, I thought, you know, whatever, we're going to win. We're going to win right now. And just very arrogant about the whole thing. You know, we got absolutely picked up and body slammed our first year. I think we were 25-30, missed the Big 12 tournament, which is basically impossible to do. And you know, we went to work, and, you know, I thought that we would just come in and win because that's what we do. And it turned out to be a total different story. We brought in our ball club the next year and We're fortunate to produce the largest turnaround in the NCAA. We went from 25 wins to 48 wins in the Super Regional the following year in a Big 12 title. And it started, I believe, with the concept of the pack and the Omaha Cup, which is something that after we got hammered in 06, I mean, you know, we released a lot of guys and this and that, and everybody kind of knows the way the game goes. And especially back then, it was kind of the Wild West, and the fact that there was transfers and you could have as many guys as you wanted on aid, and these type things. And so things happened pretty quick and pretty fast. And we just caught a lot of heat over the fact that we had revamped the ball club and this and that. But the thing that really struck me was I knew how I coached. I knew how I'd always coached, and I knew what we did. But I came to realize that summer, Sheets, that I had never defined how we coached. I coached those hitters as hard as I could that year, and we just didn't hit, and there was not buy-in.
Right.
And I could not get over this fact. And literally, I was watching a documentary in between recruiting trips on Wolves and how Wolves function as a pack. And to survive, they've got to depend on each other. There's alpha Wolves, there's beta Wolves, there's hunter Wolves, there's caretaker Wolves, there's scout Wolves, there's Wolves that provide protection. There actually is no such thing as a lone Wolf. What happens to a lone Wolf? They go off and die, man.
That's right.
And so the light bulb went off, and I, at that instant, formed what we call the pack. And I defined who we are, how we play the game, what your role is going to be, how are we going to recruit, how are we going to practice, how are we going to prepare, how are we going to make a lineup out. And it is all by defining who you are and what's your job, duty, or function, and how can you help this ball club win a championship. And we define the four pillars, you know, attitude, approach, intensity, and toughness. And we gave actual definitions to all and what are going to be the byproducts of AAIT. And it's going to be aggressors and competitors, and laid the groundwork for that. And it's something that's been going on since 2006. And there's been a lot of players developed and a lot of championships won through the pack.
That's it. I mean, the stats are just absolutely off the charts when you look at what that offense has done, especially in your time at A&M. But let's bring this back to the press conference, because now we're really starting to dial up on where you're at in your career, where you're at personally at home. And you made reference to it, man, the trip that they made to Omaha, you didn't get to see in person. If you could unpack that for our guys.
They broke through and got to Omaha in 2011. It was just absolute, you know, if you want to feel complete humility and humbleness, then try watching a team that you had a major hand in putting together and a team that you coached all of them. Try being kicked out of your house and watching it from your parents' house on TV. I wasn't there in 2011. You know, I had been fired in January of 2011 leading into the season where they win the Big 12. They win the conference tournament in walk-off fashion. They beat Arizona in a regional, and then they go come back and beat Florida State to get to Omaha. I watched all of this unfold. And one thing that you will learn is that when you're gone, you're gone. And that teams and people are going to win. I don't care how important you think you are. They are going to win with or without you. And that's just a fact. And one point I want to make that I wish I'd have made in that press conference that I didn't is Rob Childress didn't fire me. Rob Childress is my best friend still to this day. I fired me. And that's something that everybody needs to know. Rob Childress stuck by me for over a year trying to get me right, trying to get me to put a beer bottle down. But we had tremendous success in 07. I touched on that.
Yep.
Win the Big 12, finish in a super, come back out in 08, and we win 16 Big 12 games in a row. It's a conference record. Win the Big 12, wind up in a super regional again. 09, we're the first team in A&M history to begin a season, preseason number one ranked team in the country. 2010, you know, we win the Big 12 again, losing the if necessary game at Miami. And so we had experienced all of this success. And behind the scenes, like my mentor, Coach Tony Robiso, you know, says better than anybody, your private life will ultimately become your public life. And I was living as an enemy of the cross. And although I knew who my Lord and Savior was, I was living as an enemy of the cross. I was self-medicating every night with 10, 12 beers. I had divorced myself from my family physically and emotionally because I was not man enough to put up with the rigors and the demands of coaching at that level. And so I started to self-medicate, and it's very easily done. You know, I was not drinking when I went to A&M. In fact, my sister, who's a missionary, called me when she found out I was getting the job at A&M, you know, begged me to stay at Arkansas because she could just see it, I guess. It was almost prophetic. She said, don't go to A&M. You need to stay where you're at. And in my arrogance, I actually hung up the phone. I said, whatever, and I hung up. And I was going to do it my way. And it can happen to you very easily, especially if you are predisposed to that lifestyle. I had ran hard, since my teen years. And now I'm in my mid-30s and running even harder. And the best way I can equate it to guys is it's like being at the beach and you're out in the water and you've been messing around in the water and you look up all of a sudden and you can't find the shoreline. You're adrift, man. You're out to sea. Mm-hmm. And I looked up one day and just could not stop. And, for over a year, my family, Rob, they all tried to help. And my, arrogance and ego and pride, I thought I was above it all. I thought I had built that thing. I thought, you know, there's no way anything can happen to me. And, let's fast forward to January of 2011, mm-hmm. when on a hunting trip, you know, things go south and Rob has no choice but to let me go. And at that moment, my world ended. God stripped me of everything. And I found out that all the people, you know, up to that point, Sheets, what you need to know about me is I was a very egocentric, arrogant prick, for lack of a better word. And I'm going to put it in perspective for you. If you called me, I might or might not call you back. I can promise you, me and you wouldn't have been doing this interview.
Right.
Because I thought I was the man. I thought I was untouchable. I thought it was all about me and what I could get. And there was a hole in my heart that I was trying to fill with things that are of this world, mm-hmm. and none of them are eternal principles. And ultimately, God took me from what I was, you know, had perceived as the top of the mountain. You know, here I am in my late 30s, and I'd interviewed for the head coaching job at Mississippi State. I'd interviewed for the head coaching job at U of H. Mm-hmm. We were winning championships at A&M, but I was living as an enemy of the cross, and I was knocked not partway down that mountain. I was picked up and dumped all the way off that mountain, and all the people that you may have big leagued or this and that on the way up, you pass on the way down. So at that instant, I was stripped of, in my estimation, one of the best assistant coach. I was associate head coach. Rob Childress allowed me to run every aspect of that program, and every aspect with no questions asked.
Sure.
We were best friends. I was best friends with everybody there. I was making close to $200,000 a year. And in an instant, because of your decisions, not anybody else's, I'm solely responsible for this. You are stripped of absolutely everything that you tie your identity to. And that is a lethal combination when you tie your identity to being the man and being a baseball coach or being a baseball player. You know, nowhere in the Bible does it call you to play or coach baseball. Mm-hmm. All it calls you to do is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, body, and soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. And that was so lost on me, it wasn't even funny. So in an instant, I had nothing. I lost my family for a period of time. I lost friends, almost all of my friends. I lost the camaraderie. I lost the team. I lost who I thought I was. I lost every ounce of income. In an instant, I killed my entire, I killed my family, you know, with decisions that I had made. I killed the lifestyle that we knew and what we were living. I broke a lot of hearts. And everybody now was having to live in the wake, literal wake, of the decisions that I had made.
That's right. And you have absolutely taken us, and everybody listening to the show, to the bottom of the barrel with you.
The very bottom, man. Like, I'm put it in these terms to you, Sheets. I wanted to die. Wanted to die. And I had, for the longest time, my family was in and out. And I had to sleep with my daughter. She was 4 or 5 years old at the time. Mm-hmm. Only because I had to hold her and feel her heartbeat and her warmth just to stay alive. I didn't know if I would wake up. Sure. I've never been to a place that dark, ever. I was dead. And in an instant, God, just like he did Jesus with Lazarus, said, get up. And that's what happened. Well, now we're at the point where I am being humbled. And, you know, obviously, once you're fired, you have nothing. And the season had started. There is nowhere for me to be, nothing for me to do. I'm in no shape to do anything. I'm still a drunk, and you know, I've lost everything. And let's fast forward to, you know, we watched the Aggies play the phenomenal 08 season, which is living proof that you're not the man, and they don't need you. Mm-hmm. And then it's time for jobs to come open, as every coach listening will know. They start breaking in May, and I'm still arrogant enough to think I'm going to get a job. And, you know, resumes coming together and this and that. And absolutely, I'm untouchable. Nobody wants anything to do with me. And the Texarkana College job came open, who arguably, not to toot my own horn, had done more at that school than anybody else had ever done. I can't even get an interview for that job. The Galveston Junior College came open. I try to go. I go there on an interview. I don't get that job. The South Dakota State, and here I am, coming off being the associate head coach at A&M, and had built up this view of myself that was totally false.
Sure.
South Dakota State head coaching job. I jump on a plane and go interview for that job. Can't get it. There's an NAIA school, Nashville, comes open. Mm-hmm. I go interview for that and can't get it. I interviewed with Coach Lopez at Arizona. I thought, you know, we went back and forth on email and phone. I thought I might have a shot at that. Coach Bianco, we visited with. Talked to Coach Morris one time. Talked to Coach Turtle Thomas. And nothing. Absolutely nothing. And it's because, Sheets, A, I was not deserving. Mm-hmm. B, I was not healthy. And at that moment, in that season of my life, I was not something that anybody would invest in.
Right.
And I still had a lot to learn, and I still had to grow. And so, consequently, having run through all of our savings, we're talking about $100,000 plus, mm-hmm. Gone through in savings. Just to make ends meet. I tell these kids all the time, you know, we talk about pressure. You don't know pressure. Pressure is when you got a house note and you ain't got a job. Mm-hmm. And, you know, pressure is when you don't know how you're going to pay the bills. That's pressure.
Sure.
And it would be one thing had I not gotten the job done at A&M and been fired. That would be totally one thing. But it's completely different when you self-induced your own firing. That's something that takes years and years to get over what you've done and all the hurt you've caused. Mm-hmm. Consequently, having blown through everything and having to just try to make ends meet, believe it or not, I worked in a feed mill. More feed and supply is a feed mill. About 20 miles outside of College Station, I'm working in a feed mill on my 40th birthday, man. A feed mill. I'm loading cattle feed in the back of 18 wheelers. 40 bags go on one pallet sheet.
Yep.
I'll just tell you that right now.
You know it.
I'm loading feed in the back of 18 wheelers with Guatemalans that ain't speaking English on my 40th birthday. That was my job. Mm-hmm. I had fallen from where I was to that because of my actions. Mm-hmm. By the grace of God, by the absolute grace of God, Jeremy Talbot, who had coached with us at A&M, was at that juncture selling pharmaceuticals and hooked me up with a guy named Tim Lanier, who's one of the best all-time players at LSU and is a big wig in this pharmaceutical company. And I have to go through, 3 weeks of what they call in-home training on a computer where you've got the job, but if you fail a test, you don't have the job. And then if you pass all those, you go to New York City for 3 weeks. So fast forward, I'm selling pharmaceuticals come the fall and I'm driving and it gets better. One thing to get fired and move. It's another thing to get fired and have to live in the same city for over a year.
That's right.
Where you got fired.
That's right.
All right. Our house would not sell. So here we are in College Station this entire time. Well, my pharmaceutical area is in Southeast Houston. So I'm driving this 2 hour one way. Mm-hmm. Back and forth every day, and I'm horrible at this job. I absolutely suck at it. I was just a duck out of water.
Sure.
And, still drinking, still making terrible decisions, still living as an enemy of the cross, but I'm praying every day. Lord, please, God, now we're into October, November. Lord, please, I beg of you, open a job this spring. And you know as well as I do, there's no jobs that come open during the spring.
Very true.
And, lo and behold, it's February, and Jeremy Talbot calls me. I'm walking into a convenience store, honest to goodness truth, just got off from selling pharmaceuticals to buy a six-pack of Tall Boys. And JT calls me and says, dude, you won't believe it. Nobody knows this, but Mike Trahan's going to step down as the hitting coach at UL. Don't say a word, but that's what's going down. And I said, JT, this was my exact words. I will pay them to allow me to go there. And he said, well, let me make a phone call, next week or a few days. And here's the craziest part about living a lie. All right. I just got essentially a reprieve. The Lord opened a glimmer of hope through a tiny crack in a door,
right,
in that phone call. I'm walking into a convenience store. Remember that. What do you think I continued to do after I got that phone call?
Sure. Tall Boys were in your truck.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. I still purchased them.
Mm-hmm.
And over the next week, Coach Robichaux and I, it's just amazing the way the Lord works, the men that he brings in your life. He had remembered me because they played in our regional in 07. And all of the content about the pack was hanging in our clubhouse. And back then, you switched dugouts, home and visitor. And Coach Robichaux, you just got to know him. He's a pack rat. He went in there and helped himself to all the pack stuff.
Guarantee it.
And, which I had no clue that he had done that. So he had already built some respect and understanding of what we were doing. And him and I slipped off and met in a hotel in San Marcos. They were there playing Texas State. And by now, we're getting a midway point in the season.
Mm-hmm.
And agreed that I'd come over there for $42,500, which is a far cry from where I was. But mm-hmm. The Lord has spoken this to me in my journey when I couldn't find a job. It comes out of Job 8, verses 5 through 7. He said, but if you will look to God and plead with the Almighty, if you're pure and upright, even now he will rouse himself on your behalf and restore you to your rightful place. And this is what I took out of it. Your beginnings will seem humble, so you're prosperous, your future will be. And that's something that I always held in my heart, that if I do get another shot, my beginnings working at a feed mill, going to UL for $42,000 will be very, very humble. But if you'll walk in my ways and in my requirements, prosperous will be your future. And I've never letting go of that. Mm-hmm. And in that instant, Coach Robichaux went ahead and kicked open the door that had been opened and allowed me, because that man believes in second chances. He don't care about your past. And he brought me in and totally went to work rehabilitating me and my family.
And it's such an awesome run of what you guys did at Lafayette. I mean, back to baseball for just a second. I mean, we're talking about some serious poster numbers. We're talking, an offense that was ranked 10 in the country in 14 offensive categories. You're a game away from the World Series in 14, 58 victories, you know, number one ranking. When you're looking at these things, man, you're just, it was an absolute rebirth, which comes back to our topic today, transforming you back from where you were to who you could be and where you could go. And like you said, back to humble beginnings and moving forward. But Matt, how full does your heart get when you think about your time there at Louisiana Lafayette and under the leadership of Coach Robichaux?
Well, they saved my life.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's amazing the way God works and the fact that he took a drunk. I was still drinking when I went there. He took a drunk, right, and sent him to the drinking capital of the United States. And I don't drink anymore. I'm 4.5 years without a drink.
There you go.
And it's because of that place.
Yeah.
It's because of the men in that place and the community that that place is. That will go down as the 2.5 greatest years of my life. No matter what happens, absolutely no matter what happens, because they collectively, starting with Coach Robichaux, Anthony Babineaux, and all of those guys collectively helped save my life. They understood they were taking in damaged goods. They didn't flinch, didn't blink, didn't back up. They said, look it, boy, this is who we are. Mm-hmm. This is how we go about our business. Come on up here and we're going to help you. And at the same time, we want you to help us. And I walked into a team that was absolutely not very good at all. They finished that year 23-30. Mm-hmm. Coach Robichaux didn't let me do a whole lot then because he didn't want the pack being exposed to something midway through the season. So basically, and that was a very wise move on his behalf. Yeah. Basically, what we did was I recruited all the time they played. And when the season was over, we sat down and went to work. We retained quite a few guys that were there, but we also brought in, you know, what we call OKGs, our kind of guys. And we went, got back to the basics, playing blue-collar, hard-nosed baseball. And I looked around, and I realized this, Sheets. I quit drinking there because of those boys.
Yeah.
When I looked them in the eyes, God had taken me to a place that not only I was broken, but they were broken. I looked into the eyes of these boys, and you know, this kid's dad's in prison. Mm-hmm. This kid's mom's an alcoholic. This kid's mom's an alcoholic. This kid's mom's been married 5 times. This kid's brother died. Everybody there, including myself, I was the chief one, was broken.
Yeah, had a story.
We were all a bunch of nobodies that collectively set out to become somebody, and we did so through faith, sacrifice, and obedience, and we found out that God rewards those virtues and those qualities. And his face has shined down upon us ever since. And I will promise you this, and nobody will ever convince me otherwise, what we did there was nothing short of miraculous. And it was all because we set our sights on him. We died to ourselves and to our own needs and urges. And we absolutely loved each other and played and coached for each other. And that's why we did something that nobody thought was possible.
Full disclosure here, listeners, I told Coach Deggs before we started recording, I wanted this to be as transparent, as dirty, as grimy as he wanted to get. And obviously, he wanted to do that for the power of the story and the power of what he's gone through, that someone listening to this is going to be better served for being part of this podcast. But now we're going to transition into being the new head coach there at Sam Houston State and taking over again a program that's got so much tradition, so many great coaches, great players, and success on the field inside this program, and also becoming a second-time head coach, learning lessons, powerful life lessons along the way. Talk us through opening up the door the first time there being the new Bearcat skipper.
Well, you know, that transformation really came about at UL Lafayette and living for those boys. And what I realized, what I truly realized during that time was that I will always need them way more than they need me. That is what I realized during my time there. Those kids saved me. Those kids made me. Those kids opened the door and allowed me the opportunity to become the head coach at Sam Houston State. They don't need me. I need them.
Sure.
And so if that's the case, then what I'm going to do is work for them, love them, and give them absolutely everything that I have. And that's how the transformation came about. Mm-hmm. I knew that I always had leadership qualities and was blessed and could lead. And you know, the door was open when I told Kathy, I said, I'm not going to go for this job. We're sitting in our, you know, in our bedroom at UL. I said, I'm going to send Coach Williams, the AD at Sam Houston, a text. And that's what I did. I shot him a text. And he texted me back and consequently interviewed and was blessed that they believed enough in me to allow us this opportunity. We got here in 2015 with the definitive vision, mission, expectation, and standard. And, you know, our vision is crystal clear. I believe you've got to have, if you can see it in your mind, believe it in your heart, and then wake up every day to outwork somebody, punch the card, and I mean absolutely outwork everybody to get what you see, then you can do it. Then you will, at that instant, be in the business of the impossible. And so we have a definitive vision. That's 40-plus every year, top 25 RPI, conference champs, tournament champs, regional champs, and a chance collectively to walk through the gates of Omaha as a community, as a university, and as a program. Our mission is the only promise we make every player here. We don't promise you your number. We don't promise you you're going to play. But what I do promise you is this, is that when mama and daddy drop you off, we will develop you as a man, mind, body, and spirit. My job and my one promise to you is to develop you into a well-rounded man that when he leaves here will be a smashing success at whatever he does, and most likely will not be baseball. The second part of our mission is if God gave you the ability, we're going to get it out of you. We develop players. Then we're going to make sure you graduate. We're going to get that master key in your pocket to open up every single door, and we're going to win championship rings together. That's our mission. That's the one promise we make you. Our expectation of you is this, 15-plus hours, 3.0 GPA, practice hard, play hard, serve your community, love your teammates. If you want to play for us, that's our expectation. That is how you get on the field. You don't have to pitch it at a 2. You don't have to hit 10 jacks in the fall. You become great at what you control, and you meet our expectation, and you will get every single opportunity. The greatest part of our expectation is this. It takes absolutely zero talent. You're not here because you're not talented. I want to see how good you can be at what you can control. And then the last part's our standard. We don't have a rule book. We don't have a policy manual. We have a standard. It hangs in our clubhouse. All things are possible. We bring energy. I like to help. I like to serve. No excuses. Never out of fight. Expect. We don't hope. We expect. And ready to work, ready to lead. Tell our guys all the time, your commitment to the standard will only run as deep as your belief as to where you believe we're going. So if I kind of believe we're getting Omaha, I'm going to be kind of committed.
That's right.
Well, you're not going to fit in the standard. You're not going to last. But if you truly believe with every fiber in your being that we are going to do the impossible, we're going to walk through those gates, you're going to live in that standard. And you know what? Consequently, Sheets, these boys have all bought in. They all live and play and love, you know, love each other. And we have zero issues. Mm-hmm. And that's because our guys live above the bar every single day. That's what we call the four legs of our wolf and of the wolf. And that's our why. That's why we wake up. That's every morning as early as we do, and why we go to bed thinking about what we do. And I firmly believe that game plan that we came in here with has allowed us to get to the point where we're at. You know, we got here in 2015 and inherited a bunch of guys that love to play and love to work hard. But might not have been as talented as, you know, the groups that they had in the past. And so we didn't recruit any of those guys, but we made a concerted effort that, you know what, we didn't recruit these guys and they didn't recruit us, but they are going to get our absolute best and we're going to provide a positive experience for them. And we did that and had a great year, finished in the conference championship game, came back the next year, had 26 new faces, recruited, you know, OKGs, our kind of guys, and, you know, we're fortunate enough to win the league and win the tournament and lose narrowly to Arizona, who went on to play in the national championship game in a regional. And then all of these guys were 1 year older this year. And obviously we were blessed and fortunate enough to do what we did this year.
Now I'm going to lean in a little bit harder on this because I think for our coaches, get us inside the program a little bit more. I love how you outline exactly what your standard is and exactly the four legs of the wolf, but dive in a little bit more into What's it sound like or feel like in the locker room? Or what's it look like on the practice plan or the team huddles in recruiting? Like I said, I love the fact you're giving that speech to the parents and the players and outlining exactly what their expectations could be of you and your coaching staff. But paint the picture for us of what it looks like deeper inside your program.
Well, you know, it starts with what we call the pack way. And there's five components to that pack way. And, you know, the first one is this, is that you continue to raise the bar. The bar cannot stay where it's at. And so it's up to us to continually raise the bar and uphold the standard. You know, I think the biggest thing talking about clubhouse or culture mm-hmm. is, you know, I'm going to give you two instances, all right? And this is what it would look like. You walk into our clubhouse, you walk into our operations building, Sheets. I'm going to say, hey, Sheets, man, how you doing today? And what are you going to say, Sheets?
Doing great, Coach Daggs. How you doing, my man?
And then, you know what I'm going to say? I'm going to say, Sheets, I'm doing awesome. All right?
Yeah.
So you told me you were doing what?
Great.
So what did I just do to you?
Took it up a level. Dialed it up.
You.
That's right.
So immediately, and literally, if you walk in our clubhouse right now, that's going to go down.
Sure.
And it will go down with the first guy you pass. And then whoever beats you is probably going to start laughing, okay? And we're going to both realize that there was a competition that just took place. No matter how our day is going, that happens with every single encounter, not just with me, but with everybody in here.
I love
and then
that.
We're going to shake hands.
Mm-hmm.
And then you know what's going to go down with that handshake. There is going to be a competition. I'm going to try to crush you. And you, at the same time, are going to try to crush me.
There it is.
And then we're going to debate for the next 5 minutes over who won and who handed out a dead fish. And then we're probably going to start telling everybody within earshot that Sheets just handed me a dead fish. And then you're going to start getting ragged.
Sure.
All right. And this goes from the head coach to the manager. Mm-hmm. It does not matter. That's our
awesome.
Culture in an instant.
That's awesome.
That would sum up what's going on inside that clubhouse.
Mm.
And I think the biggest thing when we come to raising the bar and upholding the standard and creating a culture is no matter how you were doing in that instant, by doing that, what did we just create? Well, we competed at something. Mm-hmm. We laughed and we interacted. That is unbelievable.
That's right.
That's awesome. Now, not only is everybody in here positive and we're competing, but the next thing is we don't use the word hope here. You know, hope, I call it a culture of hope versus expectation. Hope means you're kind of prepared. Expectation means there's blood and sweat equity in the bucket. So if I ask a kid, hey, Frigé, how you going to do on that algebra test? And he says, man, coach, I hope I pass it. What did he just tell me is going to happen on that algebra test? He's going to flunk that test
mm-hmm.
because he just told me he hopes he's going to pass it. So that was code for, I have not prepared at all. But if he tells me, coach, I expect to kick that test in the butt. Well, expectation means that you've prepared. And so the biggest difference in the two is this. When I hoped for something and it does not happen, I'm a little disappointed. But when I expect something to happen and it does not happen, now I'm pissed off.
Yeah.
And that's the culture we've created. Is we have surrounded ourselves with a bunch of positive blue-collar dudes that love to compete, love to rip on each other, are all thick-skinned, have all been coached hard, and have a passion about the game that are absolutely a bunch of sore losers. Mm. And that's what we've created. That starts with building your identity. Our identity is pretty simple. We're the pack. We live in a pack mentality. And then you've got to be organized, consistent, and bring a united message every single day. Our united message bleeds through in everything. Everything we do is about attitude, approach, intensity, and toughness. Where are we going? 40 plus, top 25 RPI. We don't waver. We're going to win the league. That's our message every single day. We're going to climb the top of this mountain. It's not a new quote every day. It's not a new mantra every day. That's where people miss the ball. They think they're off the ball with that stuff.
Sure.
You have to create an organized, consistent, united message. If you don't take anything away, take this away. Organized and united, you will kick some serious butt. Yeah. And then we overachieve. Well, how do we overachieve? Well, we compete at everything. I just explained that to you, Sheets.
Mm-hmm.
We compete in how we ask how we're doing. All right. I've got guys that'll buy a thesaurus so that they can top me on how they're doing. They've run out of words to say.
Right.
We compete at everything and we celebrate every little thing. We stay off the scoreboard. Do not tell me a result. Do not tell me a stat, because nobody here cares. Nobody. From me all the way down, we set out to become the absolute best at the stuff nobody cares about. Well, what does nobody care about? I want to see an 8-pitch at bat where you ground out to the shortstop and run a 4-1 down the line. That's what I want to see. Mm-hmm. And we will celebrate the heck out of that. All right. I want to see you go out there without your best stuff and toss a zero up after we just scored. We're going to celebrate the heck out of that. I don't care about scoreboard. I don't care that we hit a jack. I don't care. That's where some teams miss the mark. They celebrate momentum. We don't ever celebrate momentum. Don't come to me with momentum. We celebrate what we control and every little thing. And by doing those things, we create a pride and cultivate an atmosphere of family and trust that really and truly, Sheets, is only known to those that have taken part, made an impact, and finished. And you create a pride that is only known to those dudes. And when you do that, anything's possible.
And that's where I want to go with this. You just walked right into the spider web. And there is most certainly a positive residual effect that's happening for these players as they move through your program and they get out into the real world and they see things as they are, but they're bringing this element, this confidence, this maturity, this ability to compete, this ability to win. They're bringing it out in the community. What's been the feedback you've gotten back from those guys as to how that approach has gone for them inside their new careers?
Well, their message is pretty simple, man. They're all winners, dude. When they walk out, they're out competing people immediately. You know, the common theme is, I can't believe that so-and-so gets here at this time or they leave this early. These guys are conditioned. They're going to punch the card. They're going to be the first ones. They're going to punch it. They're going to be the last ones there. They understand that they're going to have to outwork everybody and that hard work pays. They understand the importance of team and that it's not about them. And they understand that in everything in life, they're going to have to just press on. I think the biggest value that they come back with is that the most important thing you will ever do is respond. Embrace the challenge of getting knocked down. See how quick you can get back up and just keep coming. And that's what makes these dudes successful. They will not stop. I can guarantee it.
Certainly talking with all these great coaches through our podcast and being part of the ABCA, and I'm on my third year out of coaching, and I'm very forthright, just like you and I talked. We're going to be so transparent on the show. I was so transactional, 11 years in the game, very transactional. The wins, get to the next championship, get the next kid in, move it forward. If you can't give me what I need, you know, dish them off on the side, give me a new one. Where I look back now and I don't have those relationships that I really now crave and want out of the kids I coach. I have some, but not to the magnitude that I would be if I had approached it in a more of a transformational way. And so my question to you, Matt, is this.
Amen.
For so many guys, man, that are transactional, they're listening to this going, and if I step back for just a minute and I challenge the way that I approach this and I see that I can fall on one side of the fence or the other, how do you, as a guy that's really fell forward into being transformational, how do you fight the urge to not go back to wins, not go back to press, not go back to ego and let that drive your train?
One sentence. Humble yourself before the Lord and he will lift you up in due time. You have to live a life of humility. That means you die to self, die to your urges, and you live for him and his will. That's it. And I will tell you this, dude, you're going to have days where you are right back to the same dude you were. Jesus didn't come to save the guys that are healthy. He came to save the sick.
Right.
I promise you that. Mm-hmm. I still fight the same things I've always fought. I'm still arrogant. I'm still egotistical. But what I do each morning is I wake up and die to that person. I purposely live in a life of humility and service and sacrifice to others. And you have to make cognizant, aware decisions every day that that's who you are. And this is why you're here. This is why you've been given a second chance. Now go out and make the most of it. If you get a second chance, that's on you. You've got to go make the most of it. And you hit a great point, Sheets. 430 days outside the game. You know how many times I missed playing the game? Zero. Do you know what almost killed me?
The people.
Was the lack of camaraderie and relationships.
There it is.
That will take you from transactional to transformation without even knowing it.
Yep.
It's not like I watched a program or read a book or you know, decided one day I'm transformational.
That's right.
No, I learned this. And I will say this. There's a great book called Inside Out Coaching. In fact, I did read a book.
There you go.
But I was already doing these things. But there's a great dude named Joe Ehrman has had an incredible amount of success. Mm-hmm. And it's called Inside Out Coaching. And I suggest everybody read that, where he talks about, I didn't even know the words transactional or transformational.
Right.
I didn't know what that was. I didn't even use those words. I just knew that I missed those relationships. And if I got back in, man, I'm coaching for those dudes.
Sure.
I need those dudes. So that's called transformational. Well, the book's called Inside Out Coaching. I highly suggest everybody read that. And that's what you miss. You miss the relationships, man. And that's why I do what I do. That's why I'm talking to you. That's why I share. That's why I give my testimony. That's why I speak. And it's kind of like I told the boys, all right? So after this press conference, I had no idea this press conference was going to do what it did.
Right.
I didn't even know what viral meant. All right. So the next day we get on the plane, fly back home. We start exit meetings and oh my gosh, coach. Hey, coach, Kirk Herbstreit, coach, Kurt Warner, coach, this has gone viral. They're going crazy.
Yeah.
Well, what's viral? Well, that means everybody's seeing. Okay. So I sit them all down and I said, look, I had a bottle of water in my hand. And I said, boys, right now you need to understand one thing. I said, what am I holding in my hand? Well, that's a bottle of water, coach. I said, great. What's inside the bottle? That's water, coach. Awesome. Hey, guys, do you need water? Well, yeah, coach. What else can water do? Well, water can power stuff. What else can water do? Well, water can save your life, coach. That's what I'm looking for. Now, what I need to know is what's carrying this water. That's a piece of plastic, coach. All right, Lance Miles. Miles is a resident 4.0 student. Lance, how much is this piece of plastic worth? That plastic's worth 3 cents, coach. I said, bingo. From this day forward, y'all need to understand this. The message that we have delivered through this press conference, through y'all's play, through your love for each other, that's the water. And that's not from us. That's from Christ. He is the message, not us. All we are is a 3 cent plastic delivering his message, and we're honored to do it. And that's what I want everybody to know.
And you came away from that and took your message and dove right into social media, just a platform that's out there for all of us to digest. There's an opportunity to market your program. There's an opportunity to discuss all the success you're having on the field, the players you're putting in professional baseball. Absolutely. But you've decided to take this platform and move it a little bit differently. And the message that you're getting out is one of inside your program. Talk about what social media has meant to you and the success, or maybe even the feedback that you've had getting these messages out for other coaches and other players.
Well, I had to, you know, I don't know a whole lot about social media, but our SID is one of the best in the business. This guy's a stud, and he'd been for a long time trying to get me on there. And the response from the press conference, it was literally worldwide. Mm-hmm. And there's no way you can thank everybody. And so we came up with starting a Twitter account and thanked everybody. And I started really looking at it. And I said, you know what? This is still a way to continue to advance God's kingdom and hopefully inspire some uninspirables. And that's the way I look at it, is if my story, if what God has done to transform me can help somebody else, or if I can help motivate somebody, and it's not about baseball, whatever I put on there will pertain to anything you do, can help motivate, then you know what? I'm happy to do it. And it's my honor.
It's awesome. I'm going to ask one more question about your team this year, because I think it's, again, just expanding upon what you talked about in the presser of just the injuries that you dealt with, but more the selfless acts and the true buy-in to what you guys are about in terms of that really enveloping their lives and how they go about things, how they think, how they act. And obviously the request there at the end to give up at bats and give up innings is just powerful. But I mean, a great season. I mean, you know, first time advancing to the Super, setting the Division I record for wins, you know, ranking in six polls there at the end of the season, just doing things in that program that had not been done before. But I want you to pull back the curtain on some of the details of selflessness, dive into those injuries and what that really meant inside your locker room and inside that team huddle with those guys this season.
You know, from day one with our program, there's really three verses that this program's built on. And the first is Matthew 19:26, with man this would be impossible, with God all things are possible. So we truly believe that it's only impossible until somebody does it. And that's with anything that we're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, and we talk about it all the time. Nobody was in the business of killing giants until David came along. Nobody was in the business of going to the moon until NASA came along. Nobody was in the business of knocking off the Russians in hockey until a bunch of nobodies in 1980 under Herb Brooks came along. So really and truly with us, we believe that all things, if, you know, we're living our life through faith, sacrifice, and obedience, are possible. And then, you know, second verse is John 15:13. There's no greater honor than to sacrifice for a brother. And the biggest component to our program is this, is that results are temporary. My commitment to team, that's forever. Mm-hmm. Nobody will ever remember the fact that you hit 380 as a junior. I guarantee it. Nobody. The only people remembering that are you and your mama and your daddy.
That's right.
That's it. But they will remember your sacrifice, your loyalty, your work ethic, and your commitment. They will remember that forever. Okay, and then the last part of what we do, it comes out of 1 Corinthians 1:26-31. God uses the foolish things to shame the wise. He uses the weak things to shame the strong. He uses the lowly things and the despised things to nullify the things that are, so that no one shall boast in themselves, but boast in the Lord. And we truly, truly, truly embrace that and embrace who we are and embrace the fact that we are a bunch of Davids and a land full of Goliaths. And embrace the fact that alone, we are very, very ordinary. But collectively, if we don't care who gets the credit, we can do incredible things. Mm. And that truly is, man, what this program's all about and what this program's founded on.
Now, it's not very often on an interview where you're supposed to ask a question that you probably already know the answer to, but I'm going to do this. Coach Deggs, if you're looking back at your story and all the heartache that you've gone through to finally rise up out of the ashes, would you go through it all over again?
You know, obviously, and I'm going to answer this kind of in reverse.
It's okay.
What I tell these boys is, men, if I had to, and if I have to go through the highest of the highs and the darkest and lowest of the valleys and pits all over again, if it meant being right here, right now, with you, impacting lives, loving each other, building each other up, I would walk right back through it again if that's what it took for me to get to this point where we are all at together. Mm-hmm. And so to answer that, you know what, man? I've made mistakes. We've all made mistakes. But I truly am thankful for all of it and thankful for every experience. I'm thankful for a second chance. I'm thankful for the ability to adapt and learn from mistakes and then take a tragedy and see God turn it into a triumph and help impact people. I don't know that I would change a whole lot, dude.
There it is. You know, and we never end our shows, Coach Deggs, without asking, because certainly your experience in the game has been so profound. I'm so thankful that you walked us through this entire story and so been so forthright with your time. But advice for young coaches, I think that's a question that we have to ask every single show that we're on. When we get on great baseball men like yourself that can offer something to the listeners that are checking this out, you've changed their perspective through what we've talked about, but give them some baseball-friendly advice on how they can take a better path that's going to lead them down where they want to go.
You know, I think the number one thing, especially for not just young coaches, but all coaches, this would be my advice. Never, ever, ever. And it's pretty simple. Be afraid to be embarrassed in front of your team, ever. Let them see you laugh. Let them see you cry. Hug them. Tell them you love them. Let them know who you are. And you live that and be the same dude every single day. Do not put on an air. Do not be somebody you're not. And never be afraid to let them see your passion and your love and wear it on your sleeve, man. That would be, you know, we've got a standing quote around here. Hey, boys, sometimes you just got to overcome the coaching. Because when we screw up, middle of the game, whatever,
sure,
here we go.
Yep.
Now everybody's saying it. Hey, man, everybody's fair game. Nobody's above anybody else. And just like I said earlier, man, just remember you need them way more than they need you. If you can do those things, obviously there's a bunch of super talented coaches. If they can, you know, adapt those principles. And, you know, I think the biggest thing for us is we coach through love, man. There is no fear in love, and love conquers everything. And we're unafraid to live that. I got a ring sizer on my desk, dude, and I could care less. I told a recruit that yesterday. I told two recruits that.
Did you?
The ring is so, I don't even wear rings.
Right.
They're temporary, man.
That's right. That's right.
I want the stuff that's eternal.
Well, Coach Daggs, this has been an awesome journey to walk with you. I'm so, again, thankful for your time and you outlining this for our coaches. I think the message behind this podcast certainly transcends our game, but there's definitely a message in there that our coaches need to take hold of and apply to how they go about transforming themselves and their players and their programs. Coach, thanks for being on our show today. Thanks for joining our podcast. And obviously, we wish you the best of luck and look forward to catching up with you soon, Matt. Thanks.
I really, really appreciate you making me feel at home. Your humility in the whole thing.
Yeah.
And you were very welcoming and appreciate all the hospitality. Seriously,
sure.
Dude. And it was my honor. And if I can ever do anything to help you, I want you to let me know. Appreciate it, Sheets. Thanks for having me on, man.
And it's only fitting we end this show exactly how we started it. Powerful. Wow, just an awesome opportunity to connect with Coach Deggs and allow him the platform to offer his story to our coaches and our listeners of the show. You know, after we wrapped up, he told me he hopes that just one coach listens to this show and is positively moved and affected by hearing his story. And I'm positive it's safe to say that more than one of us was. There's no doubt about that. Huge thanks to Coach Matt Deggs from Sam Houston State University joining our podcast. I think the Bearcats fan base just multiplied with a whole host of bandwagon fans now. But we really appreciate your time, Matt, your story, your approach to coaching, and best of luck to you and your club coming into the fall. And another huge thanks to our great friends over at AstroTurf. Again, the leaders in the clubhouse for the turf industry, guys. Their support of our podcast is imperative. And if you want more information, give these folks a call. Go check out their website, astroturf.com. That's astroturf.com. Find out why AstroTurf has been ahead of the curve for almost 50 years. And we keep reminding you these podcasts are for you on your time, guys, to help you develop and grow, help you challenge what you're teaching inside this game, and connect you with the very best baseball minds in our sport. And here's how you stay tuned into what we're doing with the show. Number one, head over to iTunes or Google Play, hit subscribe. It'll show up on your phone every single time we put a new episode out. You can also head over to our website, abca.org, education tab at the top. Click on it, call us on the Clubhouse podcast link. We'll be right there waiting for you. You can scroll through and pick out which ones you want to hear. You can also just follow us on Twitter at abca1945. You'll always see the release of the show. We'll pull quote images throughout and put those out for you guys to click and listen away. And in relation to this podcast, we're looking ahead to this coming Monday, August 7th, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I want you to jump on Twitter and connect on our next hashtag ABCA chat. We're going to have coaches from all over the world checking in, engaging with one another, networking, connecting. We're going to be sharing info and insight relative to this show, talking about transformational leadership, building relationships with our players. Going to be a lot of great information out there through hashtag ABCA chat, and we'd love to see you jump on and join us. It's only for an hour. It'll be well worth your time. Again, Monday, August 7th, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Check in on our next hashtag ABCA chat on Twitter. Again, make sure you're following us on there at ABCA1945. September 1st is coming up quick. Brand new membership year, brand new convention years. We look towards January, heading out to Indianapolis. We're planning on over 6,000 of you guys coming to join us. It's going to be an awesome membership year for you. You can also find me on there as well, at Coach Sheets 3. You can also reach me directly by email, Sheets, S-H-E-E-T-S, at abca.org. We've had some messages and some emails come through that just absolutely put smiles on your face when you hear from guys that are being moved by the guests on the show, the content that's coming at them, and challenging what they're doing inside this game. Guys, keep those messages coming. We're going to read some of the best ones on the air as we move forward. We appreciate you reaching out to us. Keep those coming. Also, we want to make sure you know about our ABCA Barnstormers coaching clinics, guys. We're going to hit 20 cities throughout the Midwest and the Carolinas this fall for 1 day, 7 coaching clinics, the area's best teaching professionals, on-field demos. We're trying to cover as many fundamentals as we can inside of 1 day. You will leave that event and become a better coach. There is no doubt about it. Check out our website, abca.org/clinics, if you want more information. And we hope to see you jump on the Barnstormers tour bus this fall. And lastly, again, this is the podcast for the American Baseball Coaches Association, the over 8,000 coaches worldwide that we represent. We hope you're looking ahead to September 1st. We want to see you join the world's largest baseball coaches fraternity. Head over to abca.org if you're looking for more membership information. We hope you see all the great things we're doing inside this game and for our coaches. And as always, thank you guys for listening in, staying dialed into our podcast. Until next week, keep growing, keep developing, keep challenging what you're doing inside this game. We wish you and your club the very best, and thank you for what you're doing for the game of baseball.